There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my
FM Talk 106.5. This is Jeff Poore filling in for the great Sean Sullivan. Joining me today is Dalton Orwig.
How's it going, Jeff?
Well, we're here, right? We made it through the, I think, the worst of the weather. But
not the worst of the midterms, and that's why you're here.
Right, so we're 5 days away. This time a week from now, it'll all be over, and we can kind of get back to our lives. But I think with the possible exception of Mississippi, they may have an overtime situation over there because they have three candidates, and none of them could get to 50%. It goes to the top two, and then you have a Senate race in the middle of November. You kind of had the Doug Jones, Roy Moore situation coming through the holidays, and everyone kind of paying attention over there. And I think that's a real likelihood. You'll have a Democrat, Republican, and everybody will all of a sudden want to watch what's going on in the state of Mississippi, which will be a good break for Alabama, I think.
Yeah, finally. Alabama not in the nation's crosshairs when it comes to political news.
No, it's not. And you know, I think going back to the 2015 big Trump rally at Lab People's, it seems like it's been kind of at a heightened state ever since then. We've, you know, and after the Doug Jones thing, you thought that Democrats were going to do really well in Alabama, and it doesn't look like it's going to be the case. A little bit on that, I think the blue wave is the blue wave that never was going to be. It's become kind of, I wrote a piece for Yellowhammer today, it's kind of a blue breeze. I think it's definitely, the momentum's to the backs of the Democrats right now, but in no way is it going to be a big wave election. They'll be lucky to get the House. Right now, if you ask me, I think it's about 60-40 that they take the House, but I don't think it's a done deal. I don't think it's a sure thing. I think it's more like when Auburn plays Ole Miss, you kind of lean toward Auburn, but you never know which Malzahn's going to show up that day. It's no way Alabama versus Ole Miss where you're just, do they get to 50 by halftime, right?
Yeah, and, you know, when people talk statistics, it seems whenever somebody's favored by more than 50%, and you see this in football games, I mean, you see it in any sporting event, but especially politics, people think, well, 60% chance, that means it's going to happen. That's better than a coin flip's chance, but that's just not how percentages work.
No, and you know, I'm not going to bet the farm on this one. Here's the thing. When you come out of a presidential election, you have a new president, the party in power traditionally doesn't do well in that next midterm. And this happens throughout history. The one exception everyone points to is the 2002 midterms, and this happened right after 9/11. Republicans gained seats, but that was an oddball situation. This time, it just doesn't. All the excitement and energy on the Democratic side, it really started really, really strong out of the gate. I mean, there was the town hall meetings, and you just had these packed town halls with these protesters. There was one here I went to with Congressman Byrne, and it was just packed full of Planned Parenthood protesters. They had the signs, and they were asking the questions about Obamacare and all these things. Are you going to hold this president accountable? The Russia stuff was just then cranking up. There was a lot of enthusiasm, and you're like, well, the midterms are tomorrow. The Republicans probably don't do that well. The problem was, they couldn't sustain that for two whole years. They couldn't keep it at this pace for two whole years because people just kind of, you know, after a while you get numb to it. You run out of energy. And the people watching it, the people that are like, you know, at first are like, well, maybe Donald Trump wasn't such a good idea. But if you just bang that drum and bang that drum and bang that drum, then at some point people just kind of tune it out. I think we got to the tune-out point maybe earlier this year. I think what happened, August was a real bad month for Republicans. It's always a bad month for the party of power, month of August. Remember, that's when the town hall meetings usually are. That's when the protesters show up. That's when, you know, if you recall the 2010 midterms, that was when the protesters, the Tea Party thing was really hitting these Democrat politicians, and they were, you know, these uncomfortable situations, and the media thought, ah, there could be violence at any moment right now. Everything's really red hot. And that, you know, that didn't really, obviously, what happened later, the Republicans took the House, couldn't quite get the Senate. But it was a wave election. It felt like in the air there was like the momentum was on the Republican side, the enthusiasm was on the Republican voter side, and it just felt that way. You were like, well, this is just how it feels after a presidential election. That midterm, the party of power gets the momentum. You know, and I would say similar to 2006, that wasn't a post-presidential election, you know, in the aspect that Bush had already been in office for 6 years. But Katrina had happened. And Bush tried some entitlement reforms that were unpopular, and then Katrina happened, and then obviously they put the war on his shoulders, and the Republicans lost big in 2006. It doesn't feel like that at all. I mean, there's no, we're supposed to look at this Russia investigation. You haven't heard much about it in the last few months, and you know, the other things, this just what he tweets mean stuff. That's mm-hmm. our, you know, that does not compare to a flag draped coffin at Dover Air Force Base, bringing home more dead mm-hmm. that they just, you know, bludgeoned George W. Bush with. So what I think, though, yeah, sure, just because of the nature of things and the way politics works, the Democrats probably have a slight advantage, but they are no way capitalizing on what they should have. They got a president with a kind of a low approval rating, and they seem to have, they had momentum. It seems like it's waned. So I don't think that Tuesday night that it's going to be as big a night as it could have been for Democrats.
Well, for a time there, the Democrats had the Senate in their crosshairs also. They thought they'd be able to pick up both the House and the Senate. And like you said, with that built-in advantage with a Republican president and Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican everything at this point, that would be the built-in advantage going into these midterms. But from my perspective and watching online, you know, I follow just from my age and sports, and I end up following a lot of, you know, liberal people on Twitter and online. And it seems to me with Oprah out in Georgia and all these high-profile celebrities trying to turn out the vote, this reminds me of the 2000, I think it was 2010, the MTV Rock the Vote campaign. And I think P. Diddy was the face of that, where the Democrats are trying to get as many young people out to vote as possible. But I've also seen articles where the young people that turned out to vote for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders in the presidential election, I mean, we've all heard the term snowflake tossed around for so long. It seems like a lot of young liberals are they don't feel good about the Democrat Party, and a lot of them aren't going to turn out to vote because it didn't work their way the last time.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's kind of like you go to a game, there's a lot of hype, and you're excited for your team, and oh, they ought to beat this team,
mm-hmm.
and then they get upset. And you're not as going to be as prone and as excited to go to the next event. That 2010, you mentioned it, I think the big like weekend before the election, they did the Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert like rally for America or whatever on the National Mall. That was like the big event that was going to bring the Democrats all together mm-hmm. and counterbalance the Tea Party. It just wasn't going to happen. it just didn't happen. And here's the tale, though. With all of this going on and all these things that they're trying to do with these celebrities, if they thought they had it locked up, you know, then would you need to call in Oprah? Would you need to do all these things to kind of gin up the base to get them interested? I don't think that Oprah Winfrey is going to get a lot of voters excited about voting in an election. I think that's absurd. I think Stacey Abrams in Georgia had kind of an uphill climb anyway to win the governorship, but she's kind of the celebrity of the moment. You know, maybe Georgia's a different state right now. Georgia's not, you know, maybe 20 years ago was more like Alabama, but with the growth of Atlanta and sort of the demographic shift in Atlanta, we have more of a suburban electorate, and that kind of dominates the state. It takes from the rural parts of the state – it becomes less bright ruby red and a little more pink, I think. And that's where you have these possibilities of a Democrat winning statewide in Georgia that you didn't have previously. You know, I mean, up until it was always Democrat up until the 90s. And then as things shift, it went Republican. But now the Democrats, maybe they got a puncher's chance.
All right, 1216 FM Talk 106.5. This is Midday Mobile. We'll be coming back more with Jeff Poore right after this.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And we're back. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Give us a call. Let us hear from you, 251-343-0106. You can call or text. And as always, we're at fmtalk1065.com. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, I got House Speaker Mac McCutcheon. He's, you know, with the election coming up, there's a handful of hot races, I guess, that could go either way, Democrat or Republican, in the state. Generally, the consensus is that the Republicans are going to hold the House in Alabama, but there are some seats up for grabs. I think closer to home, there's one, the Steve McNair Adeline Clark race in District 97. There's been some talk about the race over in Fairhope between Danielle Mashburn Myrick and Joe Faust, but I think that's probably going to stay Republican. But there is a little bit of intrigue over there with this election. And also, I think the big question is what's going to happen next session. Obviously, everybody's talking about the lottery with the Powerball and the Mega Millions. So the lottery is in the front of everyone's mind. Also, the possibility of raising the gas tax. We talk about traffic and all these things. Well, you know, part of that is generating the funds to build new roads, bridges, and all these things that are you know, going to alleviate some of these problems. I think that's on the front burner. And also there's the issue of these rural hospitals closing. The idea that Medicaid expansion is a cure-all, and if that's on the table or not. So those are some things we're going to try to talk about with the speaker at the bottom of the hour. But otherwise, we're here on a rainy Thursday. Like I said, I think the worst has passed through Mobile. But as far as I can tell, it was supposed to get really, really hairy there for a while, right?
Yeah, this morning it was pretty rough. And actually, if you heard on WKRG News, that Vista Ridge subdivision in Mobile got slammed pretty hard. That's where I live, Vista Ridge. So I got a text this morning from my wife. Had a limb down on her car. Fortunately, no damage to the car, and more fortunately, no damage to my wife, which is, of course, my first question that I asked. But slung our back door open and all that. But actually, a house there in Vista Ridge had a tree fall on it. I'm not sure if they had a tornado touchdown or just the tornadic winds did enough damage there. But now that storm has moved through our area completely, we still are getting showers around here off and on. But the storm, the major part of the storm, has moved through the Florida Panhandle. And earlier today, the causeway was closed because of flooding over the causeway.
Right.
It appears now that all lanes on the causeway are now open. So
when I was driving in from Florida, they had the exits to the causeway shut off. Which I assumed it had flooded.
Did you come through, because you came from Tallahassee, did you come through that first major surge of the storm, that first line?
Right. And I think it kind of weakened as it approached Pensacola, but it got me right in Pensacola coming over there around on I-110, right when you're going through or doing all that construction. And, you know, obviously everyone's got their blinkers on and going real slow. But and then once you got to the state line, it tapered off and then got here and it wasn't as bad at all. So luckily it wasn't as heavy of a lift to get here as it might have been with that front passing through. But I would assume we have cooler temperatures coming.
Yes, a cold front. Actually, it's getting cooler outside right now, you can tell, and then should have some more showers tonight, according to staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams, and we'll hear from him here at 12:32. But it is going to cool down and be clear for most of the rest of the week.
Yeah, well, that's good, and it sounds like, with the exception of some spotty places, that the storm damage wasn't quite as bad as it might have been.
Yeah, it could have been really bad, and we were as on top of it as we could be this morning, and just fortunate that there weren't more injuries. I know west of us there were a couple deaths due to the storm. A college student in Mississippi ran over a down tree, and she ended up passing away, 19 years old, a student at Alcorn State University. And then one or maybe two more. I know there was a sheriff's deputy in Texas who died in a flood last night, ran off the roadway and died in flooding. And also, I believe they said a mobile home death in Louisiana. So one in Texas, one in Louisiana, and one in Mississippi. And so far, Alabama's fortunate.
Well, I think the worst of it's kind of going through some other parts of the state right now. I know they called off some football games last night and, you know, around Birmingham, some high school games. I guess it'll be cleared out of here in time for about once high school football gets underway in Alabama. But maybe we'll have some cooler weather, especially with the slate of college games coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, for sure. And with this being the last regular season in high school football in the state, it will be nice to have some chilly weather on Friday night. That's for sure.
The unusually long summer this year with the warm weather and just, you know, and that generally when that happens, you have a rough hurricane season. We had a rough hurricane season over in my part of the woods, but it looks like over here to the west, you dodged a few bullets. You know, there's always that scary time when you see those spaghetti models and a few of them come swinging into Mobile Bay, right?
Oh yeah,
but it really we'll talk hurricane real quick. You drive through that way between Panama City and Tallahassee, and you can tell it just come plowing through there and knocked a lot of stuff out.
I'm sure. And thanks to this texter sent in a picture from Lake Forest Subdivision in Daphne. Looks like a down tree there. So there are areas around in Mobile and Baldwin counties, and I'm sure up in Clark, that did catch a pretty good bit of this storm. And as the day rolls on, we'll see more of these pictures. But yes, go ahead and send them in, 343-0106. We really appreciate that, and we'll get the news out there.
Right, and you know, that's important, I guess. Power outages, all those things, getting everything back up and going. But it sounds to me, luckily, that things weren't as bad as they could have been, or at least as the news had kind of forewarned going into this storm.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, 343-0106, let us know what you think. We're talking election here. I think that's probably what's on everyone's mind right now. Obviously, we've had the caravan coming up from Central America. I got a guest coming up at the bottom of the next hour at 1:30, Joe Pollack from Breitbart. He's kind of a constitutional expert. He's graduated from Harvard Law, and he's going to kind of walk us through his interpretation of the 14th Amendment, which I think, you know, there's a lot of question of what birthright citizenship is, what that really means, and the interpretation of it. Where do we get this interpretation in the first place? A lot of people say there's some questions about that it was a footnote in a decision, and it's just been interpreted by the bureaucracy to the point that we have birthright citizenship. It's not clear. What if, you know, maybe the court does ultimately overturn whatever Trump tries to do, or if a Republican Congress tries to do it through statute and say that violates the Constitution. But I think once and for all, the idea of the process is, look, get the ball rolling and kind of let the court finally have a say. What is the rule on birthright citizenship? It's really vague. We got a broad interpretation of the 14th Amendment. So I think that, but it's become an election issue, and that's stuff that people like to go and vote on, and that's one of those hot button issues that will get people to the polls, at least on the Republican side, I think.
And one of the stories from overnight, and I'm sure you'll go into more detail about the caravan coming this way once you talk to Joel next hour, but with Paul Ryan weighing in on the 14th Amendment, and then Donald Trump kind of, I guess, snapping back at him. But The Hill, which The Hill, sometimes their headlines and commentary can be pretty slanted, but they ran with the headline, "Trump's attack on Ryan seen as advanced scapegoating." But it does seem like Trump has made this a central issue leading into the midterms, but scapegoating and trying to pawn off midterm losses on Paul Ryan 5 days before the election?
I don't know what's happened to The Hill. When I lived in Washington, D.C., it was one of the boring newspapers. You wanted to read about what your congressman said in the Ag Committee hearing and what he thinks of pork futures, are, you know, whatever nuanced issue that the committees were bringing up, and kind of the inside baseball, Washington, D.C. You read The Hill, you read Roll Call, And that's just what it was. Now, I think they've got a business model that they're trying. Now, here's what you do when you see their tweets. You click on the story. You'll see the tweet kind of aimed at just needling conservatives, yeah. I think. And then the story is something completely different. So maybe that's their media strategy. It's obviously, it's working for them because they keep doing it and keep implementing it. But I think that's what's going on there. So, you know, whenever you see a Hill headline, just know there's
trolling.
We're at a point in the media now where the old legacy print edition of everything is going by the wayside, and you got to think of new revenue models. And part of that is creating this social media presence that makes you want to click on something enough that you're possibly outraged enough to click on it, and that generates traffic and ad revenue. This is Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan here on a overcast Thursday afternoon as the rain's moving out of the area. Let's talk a little election real quick. Get back to what we were talking about earlier. I think a lot of these pundits are saying, you know, 30, 40 seats go Democrat. That you have it's clearly going to happen that you're going to have a Democrat take over the House. You know, I would caution people, you know, that watch this stuff, that look at these polls and don't see any way possible. Here lately, a lot of Republicans have been kind of leaking out their internal polling, saying that it shows it's a lot closer, things are a lot tighter, that, you know, you can use the polls to kind of get a general sense of what way the wind's blowing, the direction the wind is blowing. But that's, you know, where we're at right now, that's not really, it's not as accurate as it could be. And things are a lot tighter than they seem. So what I think we're going to be seeing kind of going on here is maybe not a surprise, but the Democrats, it's not a sure thing quite like they think it is, and there's a lot of reasons for that, a lot of reasons the samples they choose and where they target. You know, the generic ballot's one thing, but as it goes, that's what we're seeing outside, and I think one of the tells is just kind of some of these internals that are getting sent out to the media to say, hey, hold your horses. But real quick, we got Mac McCutcheon, Speaker of the State House, on the line with us. Speaker McCutcheon, it's good to have you on FM Talk 106.5 today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much. It's good to be with you and the listeners, and hope everything's well with you today.
Yeah, I guess everything up your way. How's the weather up there in the Huntsville area? Have y'all gotten the worst of it yet?
Well, we were expecting a little bit more, some pockets of severe weather, but so far in our area here, it got a little bit of rain, but nothing severe. So far, so good.
All right. Well, let's talk some nuts and bolts politics here. With the election just 5 days away, I think it's a kind of a foregone conclusion that the Republicans are going to keep the House in the state of Alabama. But there looks like there's a handful of races that might be intriguing. I think there's one down in Auburn, the Lovern race. There's one down here with Steve McNair. Can you give us a general sense of what's going on where you're at and how you feel about next Tuesday?
Well, statewide, we've got a couple of races that are what I would term as being active as far as the campaigning on both sides of the fence from the D and the R. But most of the polling numbers we're getting in are favorable. Our candidates out there are doing a good job. Of course, some of these are incumbents, and then some of them are in some of the new and open seats. So overall, we're pleased with where we are. People seem to be responding. I know as I travel across the state and talk about the issues that are important to Alabamians, everybody seems to be responding. You know, Constitution, rule of law, protection of our country's borders, moral values such as pro-life and Ten Commandments and In God We Trust. And when you talk about those things, you know, it hits close to home, and people identify with those issues in Alabama.
Are you seeing big bump from the Kavanaugh effect that everyone's talking about, a little more interest in this election?
I think to answer your question with a yes or no, the answer would be yes. We did see a little bit of a bump there. I think the important thing was, I think that issue really energized the Republicans. They saw some of the circus activities, if you will, in Washington, and they thought, hey, you know, this is important for our country and our state, and we need to get ready to get out and vote.
So let's shift gears. I guess everybody's kind of talking about next session, at least in the statewide political bubble. Lottery bill. You mentioned in the past that you wouldn't stand in the way, and you know, just kind of tell me where are you on that, and do you foresee that coming in the future next session?
I think, you know, we deal with a lottery bill. Gosh, for the last several years, we've dealt with one every session, and I think the upcoming session will be no different. I think what's going to be the difference in this next upcoming session is going to be the fact that the public is more educated with the lottery issue now. There's been more talk about it in our communities around the state. And when we look at the lottery, one thing that, if you'll remember, in 2016, the Senate passed the lottery bill, and then the House changed some wording in the definition of the lottery and sent it and passed it out of the House, sent it back to the Senate. I think the key issue here on the lottery is that members in the House that are going to support a lottery, they want to make sure that the definition is clear and understandable by the people, to make sure it's not trying to be a massive gambling bill, that is dealing with a statewide lottery issue, and it'll be a vote of the people. And I think that's one thing that will help move the bill forward. And in the debate, if we get to the point that we have a debate on the floor for the lottery, I think the next question is going to be, is that where is the proceeds going to go? Is it going to be something to shore up the general fund, or is it going to be an education lottery? And those are some questions that we still have to answer.
What about one of the other things a lot of people are talking about is the possibility of a raising the gas tax. You know, I think a lot of people agree there's the road situation and the bridge situation in Alabama really needs to be addressed right now. The state's growing, and you have new demands on the infrastructure. Are we at the point where we're going to have to look at doing something with the gas tax in Alabama?
I think we are. And of course, I've been a supporter of our transportation system from day one of being elected, and I see the value of the transportation system to the economic growth of our state. The two go hand in hand. When we did the billion-dollar ATRIP project, where we borrowed $1 billion to try to fix a lot of our failing bridges and do some work on our roadways across the state, it was a huge shot in the arm for our economic growth, and it helped all of those areas where we were able to spend some road money. And now we're at the point to where we've borrowed that money, we're paying it back. We cannot continue to borrow enough money to fix our transportation issues. You know, our traffic congestion is growing. Our interconnecting systems that we need to have connection of four-lane systems in certain areas of our state, connecting to the interstate system, is so vital to our recruitment of companies coming into the state. And we've got to address this issue. And I think having a tax revenue stream at the pump is going to be a part of that package. But there's other things that we need to be looking at as well. This is a comprehensive bill that we need to really place close attention to, such as the funding formula for the counties. How do we distribute the money out? Is the legislative body going to have a voice in the projects? Do we grade the projects out and try to take some of the politics out of what project gets done and which one's set back on a 10 or 15 year plan.
Right.
All of these things are a part of this, and we need to really work hard on a piece of legislation that will move us forward.
Yeah, is there going to be some kind of provision? You know, I think a lot of states have ran into the problem with cars don't use as much gas. There's electric, there's hybrid, there's all these things. They still use the roads. Is there going to be a component that's going to account for that, you think, that kind of distributes the burden of the tax if it were raised?
Yes, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. That's part of this comprehensive plan that we need to put in place. We don't need to just fix something for just a few years. We need a long-term, good transportation plan that's going to move us forward. The last time the state raised any kind of revenue for transportation work was back in 1992. And we haven't addressed it since then. Now, a lot of people get confused and say, well, they raised the local tax, and in many of our municipalities and some counties, they have raised a gas tax on the local issue, but yet we need money to help us with our overall connectional highway system. And this local money is just not enough to get us where we need to be. So we need to be looking at hybrid electric vehicles. We need to be looking at the funding formula. We need to make sure that we don't miss out on traffic that moves through our state. People that do not live here, but they travel on our roadways, going to the beaches and traveling across from west to east to Florida. We need to make sure that we've got a good plan in place. So this is there's a lot of work that's going to be going into this.
Let's get away from transportation. Talk real quick about the hospitals. The rural hospitals, you know, there's a lot of them closing. Now, I know Mayor Maddox, running as a Democrat for governor, has talked about expanding Medicaid. That's going to be the magic cure-all, and I think there's a lot of reasons to doubt that. But what do you think is going to happen there? Do you think the legislature is going to look at addressing the rural hospital situation? And I guess more broadly, in some degree, health care is for the state of Alabama as a whole.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And this is something that hasn't just come up. We've been working with this with the Medicaid issue and the funding that we are paying into the Medicaid system. It continues to grow. Last year was the first year in several years that we were able to actually save a little money and level out our Medicaid funding. But that's just a one-year thing. The Medicaid and Medicare payments coming into our medical facilities, that is also an important component of our rural hospitals and the hospital network. We're working with hospitals now. If you'll remember, we were looking at a regional-type plan to where we could help hospitals begin to organize in regions so that they could get secured funding and that they could operate more efficiently. These things are still being discussed today. But at the end of the day, it's easy for somebody to get out here and just talk about the expansion of Medicaid.
Right.
But when you really dig down into the weeds and you look at the numbers and the increase in numbers, the question is out there, how are you going to pay for it? Where's the money coming from? And we have done well, actually, in our system with working with CMS in Washington and our Medicaid program. With the dollars we have available, we've done well to stay afloat where we are, but we've got to move forward with some innovative plans, especially when it comes to rural health care. And so we're still working on that. I couldn't give you an answer today of what that would be, but I do know that we've got some people that are looking at all the options to see where we stand.
Your counterpart, Del Marsh, in the Senate mentioned, I think maybe a few weeks ago, that we're going to see the biggest education budget in the history of the state this session. Just talk a little bit about that. Is that something you see happening, and at least from your perspective in the House, and what does the education budget or situation look like right now?
Well, the way we've had a good year. You know, our unemployment is the lowest rate ever. People are working. If they want a job, the job's available for them. And of course, our revenue stream is directly connected to our economic growth. And so the growth has been good. with that in mind, you know, we've made some major changes in our education budget. The way we budget, the rolling reserve, which started back several years ago, all of these things have come to a point that we are looking at a revenue in our education budget that's going to be the best that we've seen. I'm not sure if it's the best in history, but it's definitely the best we've seen in over a decade. And so with that in mind, we've got to sit down and we've got to evaluate where we are, the changes that we have made. You know, we're looking at holding schools accountable to providing a good education for our children, the grading system. We're looking at the accountability issue. We're looking at pre-K. We're also looking, another component of this is school safety. And we're continuing to work on the school safety issue. So all of these things are a part of, they're out there, and there's still needs for more funding, especially in the pre-K and the school safety issue. When we look at all of this, then we need to sit down at the end of the day and spend that money wisely. But we don't want to overspend our money. I can remember a day when we spent every penny we had available to us, and then the next year or so we went into a recession and we had to borrow all the money we could find to get us through. So we want to be wise in our spending and not create a lot of new programs, but let's put that money into programs that are that's proven in the system to do good work.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up on this. You were up in Birmingham last week. I was up there as well for the Yellowhammer News Power of Service Awards banquet, and you were awarded with a service award. You know, just congratulations on that. But talk a little bit about that, and we'll wrap it up on that.
Okay. Well, of course, Yellowhammer is a very important part of getting information out to the people. I've always respected Yellowhammer because they report from the standpoint of trying to build communities up and not tear our state down. They report the facts. So Yellowhammer's always been important, you know, in getting information out, and I respect that group. I was really honored to be recognized. I have to pinch myself sometimes. I'm just a retired police officer and farmer and country boy raised here in Alabama, and I'm thankful to be serving. And to me, one of the things that I think is so important for elected officials, especially with us being in an election season right now, is that our elected officials need to make sure they got a servant's heart. We must never forget who we serve and the reason we're in that position. And sometimes you get egos in the way and money gets in the way, but at the end of the day, it's all about the people and trying to take care of the people. So I was so honored to receive that award, and I just felt like that, hey, this is an opportunity for us to just say thank you, and I'm glad to be serving the folks.
All right. Well, there you have it. Speaker McCutcheon, thanks for joining us today. We'll definitely keep track of what's going on in Montgomery, and I do sincerely appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed being with you for a little bit.
And that was Speaker McCutcheon. It's FM Talk 106.5. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan. Let us know what you think. 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile, but Sean Sullivan out today. Jeff Poore is sitting in for him instead. But before I get back to Jeff, I want to tell you about one of my favorite places of all time, Cottage Hill Package Store. They want you to know that it's get-together season. You know, you got the holidays coming up, and they are the place that makes those holiday parties and get-togethers easy for you. They got you covered for all your craft beer, your wine, your spirits, cigar wants and needs. They can also take care of the big party people, though. They're ready to take your beer keg orders. They
nice.
Do that at Cottage Hill Package Store. Carry a great selection of domestic beers, and they can order just about anything in their distribution network, too. So if you think of something that they don't have, which I don't know how you could possibly find a beer that they don't already have, they will do their best to get it for you. And don't forget, they also have that fantastic new Havana Rays Lounge. You can get Havana Rays and have them host a holiday party for you. And you can call them at 660-0166 to go ahead and put together a big order to pick up or any special kegs, or message them on their Facebook page. Cottage Hill Packages on Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, and then you have Havana Rays Cigar Shop and Lounge on Airport in Midtown, and you can find them on Facebook too. So Cottage Hill Package Store, make sure you check them out, especially before one of these big holiday get-togethers. Coming up next hour, Jeff, what you got planned?
We're going to talk a little bit about newspaper editorials, specifically newspaper editorials in Alabama, where newspapers don't exactly reflect the general consensus of the people that they write, that they serve. And it's just there's a trend in newspapers and editorials that tends to be left of center in a right of center state. It's always this dissonance. Does it ever, do they ever attempt to, at least look at things through the eyes of the people that they serve? But that's coming up here on FM Talk 106.5. Let us know what you think, 251-343-0106.